With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and what's next. It's a show that asks questions and peels back the layers of our average everyday experience and goes beyond scratching the surface. We interview people doing incredible things who are making a difference around the globe. Join me as we listen in and get one step closer to understanding that big ideas shared create collaboration. Collaboration can inspire community, and communities create social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face. So my next interview is with Weaving Ho, and we had a great time talking about his new film, Terrorizers. It was at the Toronto International Film Festival. Look for it everywhere, hopefully coming soon to a digital theater near you during these kind of challenging times we live in. Finding film in some respects has become easier. And on some levels, I suppose, with independent film, it's become a little more of a challenge. But do keep your eye out for the film and look into Weeding Ho's other work as well. This is a movie about how possibly life has more interesting stories to tell than movies do, if that makes any sense at all. Weeding and I had a great time talking about audacity in filmmaking and audacity in storytelling. And is that a good thing? We talked about the difference between, you know, art house and commercial and independent film, sort of that cut and paste style of filmmaking. We talked about linear versus nonlinear and what it means to challenge the status quo. And why is it that when it comes to news, we often don't dig deeper? So, you know, how do we scratch a little deeper and go beyond, you know, that surface text, the headline, as it were? This sense of fragmentation and different perspectives and how we're all products of our environment, choice and responsibility. I mean, you go, modern existentialism makes its way into this interview, I'll tell you that for sure. And, you know, it's really, we covered a lot of ground. And one of the things that I loved about this film is that, you know, it really ultimately is about community and those people that we surround ourselves with. And again, it's a thread for me this year. I think, frankly, it's a thread in most film that I watch, but this idea that we're all looking to be loved. We're all looking for our way back home. And so listen in, buckle up. Can't wait for you to hear the interview. Can't wait for you to see the film and find out why is it that Weeding thinks that a good comedy is actually pretty dark. So hopefully that's grabbed your attention and you're anxiously awaiting and maybe even already fast forwarding through the introduction to get to the interview. And don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my writing and my public speaking. You can find all of my podcasts there as well. facetofacelive.ca. It drives to the same website now. You can purchase a copy of my award-winning book, Real Change is Incremental. I would love that. Sign up for our newsletter. It's important to us. We only send out about 4 of those a year, but more importantly, wherever you listen to podcasts, sign up. Spotify, iTunes, if you're on YouTube, subscribe and give us a like, a thumbs up on YouTube. But if you can, leave us a review. We would so appreciate it. It's super important to us here at Face to Face and helps us to move this forward. And then share it with family and friends, socially mediate us in whatever way that you can. That's all at davidpecklive.com or facetofacelive.ca. Either will get you there and close to 600 interviews. So check it out. But in the meantime, though, don't touch the dial because we've got a wonderful, fun, and interesting interview with Weeding Ho talking about his new film, Terrorizers. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We are joined by a very special guest with us here today from another part of the world, and maybe he's going to talk about that. But we've got Weeding Ho here to talk about his new film, Terrorizers, which was just playing at the Toronto International Film Festival. Weeding, thank you for joining us today on Face to Face.
Thank you for inviting me, David.
So you're back home, you're back home. Talk to me a little bit about this crazy COVID experience, film festival like experience, and I don't know. Talk a little bit about what that's like as an artist and a creator.
Well, this is a big question. I'm talking from Taipei, Taiwan. This is where I'm based as a filmmaker. I've been here for 20 years now. My wife and daughter are all Taiwanese. And I was born in Malaysia. And I left Malaysia when I was 18. So my first stop was in actually Toronto. So Toronto Film Festival was my big international film festival when I was very young. So then I went to Los Angeles and I graduated from New York Tisch. And then I relocated to Taipei, started my career, and this is the whole thing about who I am. And I'm also kind of based in Bangkok right now. So before COVID, you know, everyone think you can travel easily. You just hop on the plane and just go. You can do things in two places. You know, you get a bit greedy about this. And the COVID comes and everything just fall apart. So I actually went through two or three quarantines this year. So it's pretty tough.
A lot of time on your own.
Yeah, a lot of time. It's a good thing you can always, because back then I always, you know, tell my wife I need some place, I need an office, I need a studio, I gotta be alone. I got to, you know, write my script quietly. You know, sure. I cannot be in my apartment. You know, and then suddenly you have like a couple of quarantines, 14 sure. days each. In fact, I did actually wrote one or two scripts wow. that I might direct in the future.
So quarantine actually blended well with your creative side.
For a filmmaker, yeah. I mean, you know, because you tend to get really busy. As a filmmaker, yes. you do prep, you shoot, you edit.
Sure, sure.
After you edit, you have to go to promotion, you know, distribution, all that kind of thing. And then by the time you finish everything, your energy is drained out. And then you're going to have to find some inspiration. It's going to take forever.
I've been interviewing filmmakers for a long time from yeah. various festivals, and I got to tell you, I got so much respect and admiration for the work that you all do, the nuance and the subtleties and all the details, you yeah. know, how you bring all of this together and create something like Terrorizers. Mm-hmm. And by the way, congratulations. I love the film.
Thank you.
It's beautiful, it's poetic, it's subtle, it's masterfully crafted. It really is. I've heard you referred to as an audacious filmmaker before. Can you unpack that a little bit in your own mind? Would you call yourself audacious?
I don't know. I mean, when you was younger, you look at all the good films made in 70s, you know, new wave, and those people were audacious, you know. So when I was young, I thought being audacious was a good thing. But now it's like, especially the world now, they tend to be very conservative, I think. Even you don't see independent films anymore. You don't see artsy film anymore. All the art film is well packaged, you know, fully funded, talent, star. You know, enough to bring people on the red carpet. You have all the things to make it as an art film, you know, a polished, beautiful art film, you know. So, I mean, like when you go to see art film in Cannes Film Festival, they always have a certain kind of package with them. Sales agent, distributor, you know, all that kind of machine. So, you know, when you have so many people involved, it's harder to be audacious because there are people, you know,
are you saying that the industry is sort of set up to push back against that type of filmmaking a little bit just because it's, I don't know, maybe generic or it's cookie? I mean, even recently I've heard some more criticism around Marvel films, right? Oh, CGI, yeah, yeah. Martin Scorsese, oh, yeah. CGI is ruining the world, right? It's yeah. a different kind of storytelling. It's not cinema, and, I believe.
Yeah, and the cut and paste, you know, so
cut and paste.
That's what people are saying. But look, it could be me, it could be I'm older, it could be because I try to be different. Like every time when I make a film, I wouldn't call myself audacious. Maybe people will call me audacious, but the thing is, I'm just trying to make a film that make people to wake up, make people to think about it, ask questions instead of give them a comfortable answer. I got a lot of heat from this film also, playing with the structure.
Yes.
People going in thinking they're going to watch people are conditioned to watch a linear film now,
right?
You know, so every time you play out of order, people get anxious. People are like, why do you play like this? I mean a lot of people, I think when we were doing editing, a lot of seasoned producer, like producer friends, they look at me, they're like, why don't you just do linear? What do you have to do out of linear? I'm like, well, life is short. I mean, can I do something to challenge audience? You know, I know I'm running a risk of alienating some audience. You know, I mean, look, like my film is kind of divided. So you love it, but some people just basically just like, oh, this is not good. So this is the heat I have to take. But I, when you say you love my film, I'm happy because you read into it. You know, why am I doing this? There's a reason for it. You know, I mean, I can only make friends with people who know my film. You know, it's, I cannot make everyone happy. So, you know,
that's great. Yeah. No, that's really interesting. I there's so many things to ask you about, and obviously we need to talk about Terrorizers as well. And I'd love to hear about, you know, what's next for you film festival wise, but, linear versus non-linear, you know, and I've studied a lot of philosophy over the years, and I would say I bend more towards non-linear, but I sometimes wonder if the human mind, the construct, you know, is more linear, or have we just been trained, you know, to read stories that way, to listen to stories that way, to watch television that way. And I'd love to hear a little bit more from you about that, because that's part of what I loved about your film. I had to work a little hard to step in, if you know what I mean, like,
right.
and isn't that what life is really all about? And that's the thing, you know, I would almost, there's a postmodern edge or something to yeah. the structure, which I guess lends itself to nonlinear, but mm-hmm. can you unpack that a little bit for us, for my listeners? Why do you bend towards that, Weeding?
When you look at the headline, it's already happened.
Right.
Something bad happened, right? That's the climax. And then you see the headline. If this is a sensational news, it's going to go on for 2 weeks.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
The second day, maybe some reporter, police find out some more clue. And then you start to realize that, oh, okay, there's something going on rather than just on the surface, you know? And then, see, as the day progress, you dig deeper and deeper. You actually go back past more, right? When you read the news, it's very fragmented. I mean, it's not linear. I mean, there's no one, you know, like when you read the news, you talk about something happens. No one's going to tell you, oh, you know what? The killer was born in when, this is how he got started, da-da-da, this is, no. I mean, it's like you just jump right in. So you got the, you know, you got the gist, and then you start trying to figure out. That's the news. And then when I was younger, I read a lot of fiction from South America, from Europe. I mean, you know, even there's some, even Paul Auster, one of my favorite writers, based in Brooklyn, New York. I mean, sometimes when they write story, they write in the way they're using different perspective. Every chapter is different. You know, time is jump around a little bit. Even I think children books has had that kind of setting, you know. So it's a why people are so mad about a film that is out of linear. I mean, you must have read some books before. You love reading news. You know, it's like, so I guess I thought people are better prepared for that. And in fact, I did my last film, like City of Last Things, I did a reversal chronology. And I had fun with that. You know, people are trying to figure out as I go back.
Which, by the way, for the listeners that may not know, you won the 2018 Platform Prize, I believe, for that film at TIFF.
Yes, for that, yes. And I realized that I really want to play with the audience expectations. And then it's very challenging. It's very risky, but, you know, you get the best out of it, yeah.
You know, it's really interesting to me that I sometimes have wondered, and I don't know that this is all that, fanciful is the word that comes to mind, observation. But if we as you as storytellers had presented stories to us in a different way, would we be as a human race in a different place? In other words, if we didn't have these beginning, middle, and kind of Joseph Campbell-like stories in front of us all the time that we consume, would we be better prepared for, you know, loneliness and the voyeurism that we come across in our daily life, the violence, et cetera, right? Like I wonder if we could flip that on its head, where might we be?
Right. I mean, you know, the good thing about story with beginning, middle, end, it's so that you can escape into it.
Right.
You know, you cannot be too close to life, because otherwise, why read life when you experience life?
Right.
But yeah, but the thing is, at some point when you want to talk about life in filmmaking, sometimes you just have to really, you know, really go for the directions. So that, I mean, like even film is hardly life, because you edit, you do setup, you know, everything. You just have to imitate life, you know. And with Marvel, you can say, look, this is fantasy, this is different world. I'm gonna create a world for you to jump in, which is fine, you know. Like sometimes I watch Marvel films too when I want to escape from my
sure
life. But when it's time, you know, but you cannot escape forever. Sometimes you just have to look at yourself, look at your life critically. And then film like this, hopefully people will come and watch, and then, you know, kind of get a wake up call and think about it. Because I've heard a couple of people who have told me they still think about this film after 2 days, after 1 or 2 days. I mean, this is good. I mean, because I must have show you something that hit you, so that you can keep thinking.
Well, it stays with you. And I think I actually think that most people who would see a film like yours, it will stay with them whether they know it or not, if that makes any sense. They can't, in a sense, they can't go back. They may they may choose to not go back, but on some sort of emotional, spiritual, physiological level, they can't, right? They've now experienced this story through kind of your eyes, if that makes sense. You know, it's really interesting. The French existentialists would say we escape with Marvel and these types of movies and structured narrative because we don't want to be free. Right? Right? And I got that sense from Terrorizers. Without giving away too much of the film, terrorizers, are we kind of, would you sort of put all of us in that category? Does that make sense? We're all sort of terrorizing in our own way, Weeding. Is that, does that make sense?
Yes.
And maybe you can tell us a little bit about the film as well.
Right. There's a, I mean, there's a plural. There's more than one terrorizers because it's terrorizers. And then it's not just about that guy who did some public terrorizing, killing thing. It's about, I mean, he's a product of society, of environment. You know, it could have been, well, I mean, it's easy to say, oh, video game make you this. No. It's internet make you this, or it's loneliness make you this.
Right.
It's the abandoned parents make you this. It's the one kid, you know, it's you don't have sibling now. You have, you know, like all the family have one child, you know. It could be the spoiled mother, the father, you know, it could be like the school, could be loneliness, could be friends, could be the Asian sex education. That's a lot of things to, you know, I mean, it could be anything. And also the people who are around you who somehow encourage you, somehow provoke you, you know, somehow say something that might, I mean, it's like people you bump on the street, they might have said something that you remember, you know, like you talk about like my film just now, people watch it, they somehow they there's something in their, you know, in their mind. So
it's an experience.
Yeah. So I cannot just blame him. You know, I cannot just blame video game because the gamer's gonna kill me. So it's like, you know, it's, and then you cannot just blame internet. But the thing is, people are spend a lot of time in virtual world now. I mean, you know, I mean, this TikTok is taking over YouTube now. Apparently, people spend 8 hours on TikTok. Last week, my iPhone told me you spend like 7 hours on the cell phone. I'm like, oh my God, it's like, why am I? Because I was in quarantine, of course. But the thing is, it's a, why am I spending 7 hours on a cell phone instead of looking out, you know, read a book, or maybe the world is not that interesting anymore. You know,
interesting.
Maybe we are not living in the nature. We are living in the city with smog, with noise. I mean, how can I stay in the balcony with a cup of coffee when you keep building the houses next to me and have to end up hiding inside the air conditioned room and looking at the computer, maybe watching Netflix. You know, it's like, that's a lot of things.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We didn't, you said maybe the world is not all that interesting anymore. What a great line. I mean, now we're back to escape.
Yeah. Right?
Now we're back to escape.
Yeah.
How do, question for you. And I'm sure you've reflected on this, as a writer and a filmmaker, artist. How do we get there? I mean, in a sense, I mean, what I saw, your film is a deeply relational film. This, you know, even though this is a film about barriers and walls that we build between us and violence and anger and all these things, it's also deeply compassionate, I think. And and I wonder, are all of these characters, you know, you and Ming and so on, are they real, Monica, are they really just, are they just looking for love? That's kind of an oversimplification, I think, in a way, but looking to find their way back home.
Looking for love, or looking to, you know, like looking to love or looking to be loved.
Looking to be loved. Yeah. That's good.
It's one word. It's all loneliness. Why is loneliness? You have a, you know, you're in a crowded city, you are in a crowded subway, everyone look at a phone. You know, you used to look at the strangers and try to judge him. You don't do that anymore. You know, and the kid, it's not interested anymore because you cannot have kids in play in a playground because the playground is dangerous for some parents. you don't talk to your neighbor because the neighbor is a stranger. You know, when we were younger, when we were kids, we can play, we go out and play, you know, explore everything. Now you all have to lock in. And especially in Asia, in Taiwan or in Malaysia, people, they bought a house and then they have 5 windows and then they have heavy curtain to close the window. Right. They have the iron thingy to, you know, they're worried about robbery. I mean, why do you want 6 windows when you just have heavy curtain block, you know, and then you turn on the light inside the house during the day and you don't want to see the sunlight. You don't want to have the fresh air. You have air conditioner, you have light. I just like, it's just everything human are doing, it's like, they're not very kind to themselves, you know?
Yeah, but it's they, like we're cocooning in our own, yeah, in our own worlds. And I mean, it's a huge question and lots of people are talking about it, but where is the connection? You know, where is the relationship? And again, why is it so difficult, you know, to break through those, you know, does it come back to our education system? Does it come back to our, the way we're parented, you know, the way we're raised? I mean, you know, these are big, big questions. And I love that you ask them in a film like this. You know, was a used character who says, everyone says they love me and then leave. And I felt, her performance, by the way, the performances in the film are astounding. They really are amazing. Right. And she, I mean, you've been able to get these actors to communicate so much through facial expressions. Right. Right. And for me, that's a reminder that we just need to shut up and pay more attention. Right?
Yeah. Just be quiet and just be calm. You know, it's just so many talking, so many noise and so many sound, and people just overlook the tiny little expression and small things, you know.
We miss the details.
Hey, like people are like, oh, there's no music. Oh, you know, I cannot watch a film because there's no music. Right. You know, it's like, this is what happened because now people use music to drive the audience to watch the film. You know, all the YouTube clips, TikTok clips, whatever the clips they are. Have you seen a clip there without music? No.
It's pretty rare. Music.
Yeah. So it's like we are doing pretty bad things to ourselves. We get used to the noise now. We get used to the cocoon thing. We get used to the computer. We get used to the... I mean, it's like sometimes I'm very curious, why are people so obsessed with this small little screen instead of looking at the sky, looking at the wider space? They just keep looking at this window. And that's scary, yeah. But people don't realize that. People don't realize that. Yeah.
Do you, when you were writing Terrorizers, and I'd love to hear a little bit more about where a story like this comes from for you. And I can't wait to ask you about the film canisters behind you too, but maybe we can.
I just saw that.
Yeah. We're going to definitely have to chat about those. But did you see Terrorizers as you were writing the script? Did you feel that there was a prophetic edge to this? That along the lines of Orwell and Huxley and Baudrillard and others, and so many filmmakers, did that cross your mind?
No, I mean, I like sometimes when people watch my film and then they start telling me I look like this, you know, like what did I do that? Is some kind of issue I'm trying to say? I never thought about that when I wrote the script. You know, for me it was just a story. Sometimes it looks like a story to me. It looks like a fun story. It looks like something will keep me for 2 years. You know, I did thought about Edward Yang. Edward Yang is a Taiwanese filmmaker I really admire because he's only the one filmmaker who deal with urban stories. And then I like his films, and Terrorizers was, he has a film in 1986 called Terrorizers also. And I like the sound of the word Terrorizers. I don't like terrorists, I like Terrorizers. And I thought I'd pay a little homage to him because he's also the big, he's very good at structure the big story, couple of storylines. So I did get some inspiration from him when I was writing, but I never tried to copy him or trying to do a remake
sure,
of
sure.
the 1986 Terrorizers. And yeah, I wasn't thinking much because some people ask me why did your story switch for romance story starting to you know, like a thriller story.
Yeah.
For me, life has a lot of genres. You know, in one day, something could be happy, something could be sad. It's a lot of movies in your life in one day. So sure. why can't I switch genre? I mean, this one of those things that I think audience very, very conservative because they have to read the description of the movie they're going to watch and say, oh, this is comedy. Fine. You go in, you have to watch the comedy. You cannot go something else. Otherwise, they go freak out. So they're in their comfort zone. So you cannot put them out. But I like to pull them out of comfort zone. I like to make them like, oh my God, you know, what happened? Why did he do that? You know, so
yeah, the phrase I've used before is this idea of shocking people out of their complacency, pushing them outside. I love your idea. Maybe we should all try this for like a couple of weeks or a month. We should all watch movies that we know nothing about.
It's very hard now.
It's incredibly hard, right?
It's harder and harder now.
Yeah, with festivals and reviews and the way they're presented even on streaming platforms and but I think I love that idea as an experiment to say you know, right? And because this is really in a way how our lives are lived. And again, I come back to your film and I actually think it's a very prophetic and existential piece. I really do, you know, the questions you raise and I've always been for many, many years fascinated by how authors and artists, that intentionality that comes out in the work. Right? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a real,
I mean, it's like sometimes you don't intend to do that, but it's been in your,
exactly. You know,
so it's the same thing. I keep telling people I want to make different films. People look at me and no, you're making the same films. No, I say, no, I'm doing the black and white, the color, the action, the comedy. I'm doing different film. No. It's not because you're the same person. You're doing the same thing. You know, because the intention is always the same from the same person through their works. Yeah.
One of your characters, and I think it's, Monica to you, she says, please don't judge me you're judging me based on my past.
Right.
To me, that's a very, there's a couple characters who kind of question Monica a little bit. And then there are others who don't. They question her lifestyle. They question what happened sort of a few years ago and how she was exploited. And there's so much in that phrase. I mean, we can talk about patriarchy. We can talk about violence. We can talk about sexual violence. We could talk about misogyny. I mean, there's a lot going on there. And I'm just one, as we talk about this idea of intention and writing, as an editor, it's masterfully edited, your film, by the way, in my opinion. How present were you with those ideas, those ethical ideas that you want? You know, you mentioned abandonment and loneliness. I mean, your film takes on a lot of issues, and I love that about your work. I'd love to hear more about that from you as a storyteller.
I
know it's a crazy, ridiculously big question, but
no, I mean, the answer is very simple. It's just me. I write what I feel it's right. You know, I write what I feel. I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, this is not commissioned work. This is my work. Sure. So I'm writing, I think it's the right thing. I'm editing as I try to show the thing I want to show people. So it's very hard for me trying to think about, oh, this shot, I want to talk about this. That shot, I want to talk about that. But because I guess even in life already, even when I'm not making films, I have already sympathized with people like that.
Right.
You know, I have a way to look at those people, sympathize and know what they go through. And for me, these characters in my films, I think they are really brave. They are so brave.
They're very,
there's a
transparency and an authenticity to the characters in your film, in Terrorizers, for sure. Like these are real people struggling with serious issues.
Frankly,
that we all struggle with.
It's me. I mean, there's a lot of me inside all these characters. I mean, I've been struggling with my life because I have my goals so clearly in front of me.
Sure.
I've been trying to, you know, I mean, I have to be brave to make film like this. I have to be brave to be a filmmaker. I guess because of this bravery, obsession, you know, the stubbornness. Stubbornness. The drive. So all my characters have some crazy drive. I mean, of course, you know, I don't encourage people to go that way as that young kid, you know, killing people, but that's a drive because he just want to get attention. He just want to be loved. Or maybe he just want to make confession to some girl that he think it's a appropriate confessions. But he didn't realize that it was wrong. He thought that he could just go in with the keys into someone's apartment. He thought it's fine, you know.
Right. He wasn't crossing the line.
Yeah, it's like people take your photo and put it on the internet without telling you. They think it was fine.
Right. The bound, you know? the lines we crossed. You know, you just reminded me of an old Joel Schumacher film called Flatliners. You remember Flatliners?
Right.
Kevin Bacon, Kiefer Sutherland. Right.
Yes.
And I think that the tagline in the film was some lines shouldn't be crossed. I'm pretty sure that was the tagline. And isn't that kind of a what your film is a little bit about as well? Becoming a parent. Could you have written Terrorizers before you became a parent? Do you think differently as an artist now because of that? And I've got two kids and so I'm kind of empathizing a little bit here, I think, but yeah, I'd like to hear what your thoughts are.
I sometimes I thought when I became parents, I will start making comedy and animations and children movies.
Sure.
No, I'm actually making film like this. And my daughter cannot watch. My wife was like, you know, wow. Every time you make film, it has to be this. But my wife also an artist. My wife is an artist. My wife is also the owner of my company, and she's also the producer. So, which is fine. She's actually support. I mean, like every time I have a script, I show it to her.
Right.
You know, I mean, she support me all the way. But of course, sometimes she will question, like, "Do you have to be so harsh?
Right.
Do you have to be so, you know." But I told her, I say, look, you know, I think sometimes you have to just hit people. I mean, you know, to make people kind of like you say, you know, hit them out of the comfort zone. Yeah.
Out of their comfort zone. Yeah.
Make them realize something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I realize something. And I think what I love about, and I'm so with you on the little things, and I really believe that stories like this, seeds are planted with audiences. That I hope, you know, will come back to haunt them in the best sense of the word, if that makes sense, down the road, right? And maybe it's emotionally, and maybe it's spiritually, and maybe it's relationally, but I mean, these stories like this matter. I really, really believe that. So I guess the next question is, when are you going to make your first kids film?
I'm not gonna make kids movie because they're hard to
make. When's a comedy coming?
No, in fact, my feature debut is called Pinoy Sunday. It's about two guys who carry a red couch on the road.
I haven't seen it. Can't wait to. I can see the poster.
Comedy. It's kind of funny. Before the feature film, I made two short films, which is very dark, like Terrorizers. And when I make Pinoy Sunday, people are like, what are you doing? I thought you were cool with those dark style. Why are you making a comedy? like the festival was so very disappointed. They're like, oh my god, you disappoint me because you're making this comedy of manner, you know. And then after that, a lot of people approached me to make comedies. Seriously,
is that
I
right,
actually
eh?
Did wow. some TV movies. I did some TV movies, movie for China. It's all fantasy comedies. And then the last film, I decided to just make an announcement and say, look, I'm not that funny. So I'm just going to go back to my dark side. From now on, I'm still staying with
so
the dark
funny.
Side.
You're so not. I'm I not love sure the statement.
When, yeah, I'm staying in the dark side. Yeah. So,
yeah. No, I love.
You realize, yeah.
I love that you said, I'm not that funny. And I'm going to go to my dark side. It's just, that's a great soundbite. I love it.
But that's another thing you should know. Comedy and dark movie are actually the same.
Mm.
A good comedy is actually pretty dark. You know, it's just one line. It's a thin line. So so if a guy, a filmmaker again, can make a good dark film and also a good comedy, that's pretty hard.
That's the goal
I'm aiming for. Yeah,
and super interesting. So you're trying to bring the dark and the comedic together. Sadly, we're gonna have to wrap this up here in a minute. So are you on to a theatrical release in the near future? Sometime in Asia, Malaysia, Taiwan. What's the plan for the film? Just to let our audiences know, my audience know what's next for you.
We are releasing the film in Taiwan in November.
Fantastic.
And we're trying to find some buyers for different territories like the States, maybe some countries in Europe or even like Japan or Hong Kong, so that people can play my film in the regular theaters. But unfortunately, sooner or later, it's going to go to streaming.
Right.
And you're going to have to watch my film in small screen.
On a
but
small
before
screen.
That, with the narrow windows we have for a couple of months, let's see if we can show the film on big theaters in big cities in the States, you know, in Europe somewhere.
It's a great goal. You know, Weeding, I was at a press conference at the Toronto Film Festival, and it was a star-studded cast, and Denis Villeneuve was there to talk a little bit about Dune and a few things. And he said to the audience and to the panel, the future of cinema is on the large screen. So I really hope he's right. And I hope we do see a resurgence of it post COVID. And yeah, your film needs to be seen on a big screen. I am with you 100%. Hey, and the final question, when are you getting a TikTok account?
I just got my IG account. I just couldn't. I'm just overwhelmed with that. I mean, it's going to be 5 years, maybe.
Yeah. Hey, maybe we should recommend you don't get one. That's.
I know.
Yeah. Although it might become subject matter for your next film. Who knows, right? It's.
No, the thing is, the film got promoted in Taiwan. Like, people promote films now through IG, Facebook, and TikTok.
Of course. Yeah.
You know, so it's I have to like sometimes go and find out what's going on, because people ask me to go. I'm like, okay, let's, and then I might get my TikTok account sooner than you think. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, listen, yeah. I'm gonna have to sign up myself. I don't have one. Maybe we'll cross paths there. What a pleasure talking to you today, Weeding Ho, talking about his new film Terrorizers. What a just so good to have you on face to face today. Thanks. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, David.
So there you have it, a fun, fascinating interview with Weeding Ho, talking about his compelling and compassionate new film, Terrorizers. So much going on there, and so much fun for so many reasons, you know, philosophical and existential, but, you know, also just this idea of good comedies being pretty dark is, I think, a really interesting insight coming out, not only out of the film, but out of the conversation as well. Don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my writing and speaking. Check it out. You can buy a copy of my book, Real Change is Incremental, there. But more importantly, Face-to-Face Live exists there as well. Got a whole library of podcasts. Go back and have a look, have a listen. check it out. But more importantly, please do subscribe where you listen to podcasts, Spotify, iTunes. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, like it as well. We'd appreciate that. And also, please do leave us a review where and when you can. It does make all the difference. And stay tuned. So much more coming up from Face to Face over the next little while. Interviews from the Toronto International Film Festival. We got some amazing stuff coming up before the end of the year for 2021. And we will see you very soon here on Face to Face.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.